Decker rubbed at the cut and bruise on his cheek where Bogart had punched him. His tongue pushed against the loosened tooth. "He's killed a dozen people, including my family and Special Agent Nora Lafferty," said Decker. Bogart glanced up at him and nodded slowly. "Including Nora." Bogart put his weapon away. "Look, I'm sorry I... If you want to press charges, go ahead. It was indefensible." Decker said, "I'm not sure what happened other than I stumbled and fell and took you with me. Pretty clumsy. But then I'm a big, fat, out-of-shape guy. I think you might need to dry clean your suit and see to that cut on your head." Bogart rubbed at some dirt on his sleeve and then glanced at Decker. "Where do we go from here? With all we've done, we've really gotten nowhere. You find anything useful at the army base?" "Nothing. It was a petri dish of crap, all degraded to mush, and the Pentagon has yet to get back to us. Not sure what they could add anyway. What about that story in the paper?"
"I talked to the reporter. Lancaster told us, gave us the IP info. My guys are tracking it. No luck so far."
"I doubt it will lead anywhere. Too obvious."
"So we've still got nothing, then," said Bogart miserably.
"We have a lot of things, if we can make sense of them. We have Sebastian Leopold."
"But he had alibis for both sets of murders."
"But not Lafferty's."
"So you're saying he's working with someone? That's what you meant when you said no one can be in two places at the same time?"
Decker nodded.
"But how can you be sure he killed Nora?"
"I can't. But I don't think it was Leopold who carved those words in her."
"Why?"
"I met Leopold. I would have remembered this guy if I'd seen him before. But I don't, which means I didn't. That leaves his partner. This guy wouldn't have allowed Leopold to do it. It was personal. I'm his bro, no one else. He's the one with the beef against me."
"But Decker, how could you have run across this other guy and not remember him? If he hates you so much that he's slaughtering people?"
"I can't answer that because I have no answer," admitted Decker. "But I promise you that I will."
Chapter 34 Decker stared up at the front of the bar. Then he looked on the right side of the facade and then on the left. The buildings here were brick and dilapidated. He walked down the stairs and into the dark, smoky interior. He gazed around and saw two working-class men at a booth in the back, both hefting beer mugs. There was a woman alone at a counter-height round table with a glass of white wine in one hand and a half-smoked cigarette in the other. As he watched, she placed her cigarette in a black plastic ashtray and set her wine glass down, pulled a compact and lipstick from her purse, and redid her mouth. Decker passed by them all and walked up to the bar. The same barman was there. Decker sat and ordered a Coors. The barman poured out the draft, skimmed off the foam on top with a butter knife, and slid it across, in return for which Decker passed him a fiver and told him to keep the change. This got the man's attention.
"You were in here before," said the barman.
Decker nodded and sipped his beer. "I was, with the other guy."
"Yeah, that other guy. Weirdo."
"Has he been back in?"
"Nah."
The man started to wipe down the mahogany bar using a rag with a circular motion briskly applied.
"Had he been in before?"
"Couple times."
"You ever talked to him?"
"He never talked to nobody, except you."
"He live around here?"
"Don't know. Only saw his back leaving the place. Never saw him past that."
"I don't see that waitress around." The barman chuckled.
"That's right."
"What happened to her?"
"Her?"
He chuckled harder and then stopped wiping, put his elbows on the bar, leaned across and said,
"You call it a her?"
"Maybe. I don't." "Then what do you call it?" The barman pointed a finger at Decker.
"Now that's a damn good question. I don't do the hiring here. I just pour the drinks and wipe stuff down and throw the occasional drunk bastard out the door."
"Who hired her?" Management, whoever they are. Place has been sold 4 times in 3 years. Only constant is yours truly. And I wouldn't be here, except I can't find nothing else that pays better.
So you're saying she was a guy in drag?
Or something, yeah. Don't know for sure. And I wasn't about to check to confirm. I don't hit from that side of the plate.
Decker closed his eyes, and frames flipped through his head. Tall, thin, blonde curls. That hid pretty much all of her face. Or his face. And maybe the Adam's apple, the surefire giveaway. Only surgery could take care of that.
You have any info on the person? Must have given a name, address, stuff for payroll.
Management has all that, and they're not even local. Maybe even in another state. Think they rolled up a bunch of businesses and combined it into one entity. Economy of scale or some shit like that. I bet they're making a crap load of money. Me? Not so much.
So none of those records are kept here?
No.
Who interviewed the person for the job?
Came from an agency.
You know which one?
The barman looked at Decker.
Why? You hit from that side of the plate?
Decker pulled out his police credentials.
Working a case. This person might be someone I need to talk to.
The man studied the credentials and said,
Okay, matter of fact, I don't know which one. It just showed up one day and started working.
And you didn't question that?
Hey, we needed a waitress. The other one didn't show. Said she'd been sent by the temp agency that management uses. So I put it to work.
When was this?
Day before you came in with that other guy.
And if she hadn't been sent by the temp agency?
Well, why the hell would it lie about that?
You have a restroom here just for employees?
Yeah, in the back.
The person ever use it?
I'm sure it did. Everyone has to take a pee or something more, right? Either standing up or sitting down.
Show me. The barman led him down a rear hall to a battered door marked restroom.
You got any duct tape? Decker asked. In the back.
Get it for me. The confused barman left and returned a minute later with a roll. Decker proceeded to tape off the door with long strips crisscrossing the doorway.
What the hell are you doing? Asked the barman.
I'll have a forensics team here in 5 minutes. No one goes in.
But what if I have to use the facilities?
Use the one the paying customers do. And you're going to be asked to give a description of it. So start racking your memory for every little detail.
Decker made the call to Lancaster. She said,
I'll send them right now. How was your talk with Bogart?
Predictable. He clicked off and walked outside. He had solved 2 things by coming here. First, the waitress had taken the photograph of him and Leopold at the bar and sent it and the story elements to Alexandra Jameson. She was the only one who could have done it. The intent had been to ruin Decker's reputation to the extent he had one. But more than that, they wanted him to maybe even start questioning the truth.
Second, she had left the bar, gotten a car, and picked up Leopold when he left the bar. It must have been a hybrid or electric car, because Decker had not heard a car engine, and he would have. In the frames in his mind, there was only the barman left that day when Leopold had exited. The waitress wasn't there, because she'd gone for the car.
A man in women's clothing.
Or maybe a woman who used to be a man dressed in women's clothing. It was like that movie he'd seen years ago with James Garner and Julie Andrews. Victor Victoria. And maybe the waitress was Sebastian Leopold's partner in crime. Decker had not looked at the person's feet, but now desperately wished he had. But if he had to guess, she would have been wearing a size 9. He tried to estimate her height in his mind. He had been sitting. She might have been wearing heels. He rolled the frames through. Maybe 5'10 or 11, and slim, with narrow shoulders and hips. A long way from 6'2 and over 200 pounds, with shoulders as wide as Decker's. But not inconceivable.
When the will was there, anything was possible, and it seemed anything had been possible here. He waited for the forensics team. When they showed, he told them exactly what he wanted done. Lancaster had instructed them to follow Decker's orders to the letter. A sketch artist sat down with the barman. Then Decker set off for the next place, because something else had just occurred to him. Chapter 35. Shop class. Shop class that never was this year, because the teacher had quit before the school year started. Decker had wondered if there was another reason, other than the passageway coming up in the storage room off the classroom, for the shooter to want access to this particular space. He stepped through and into the storage room in the rear. He eyed the mounds of junk from old projects left behind, like dinosaur bones waiting for an archaeological dig. Well, Decker intended to dig. He started at the top of each mound and worked his way to the bottom. He found nothing useful. So he sat on the floor and thought about it. He went through the possible steps in his head. Up here, he decided, would not be pragmatic. The shooter would need more privacy, more of a buffer zone. He left the storage room and went down the steps to the other room that had the false wall made of balsa wood. The junk pile here had been moved to the side by the shooter. Decker didn't have to dig very deeply through all the crap. He pulled out the object and held it up. A chicken wire and leather contraption with padding built into it. The form was instantly recognizable to an old jock like Decker. Football shoulder pads. But much more than that. The structure went all the way down to the waist and included supports for the arms, broadening and thickening at every point. It was built on hinges that swung open when he undid two latches, like a shorter version of the Iron Maiden torture device from medieval times. It was like an entire torso that one could strap on and become basically twice one size. He opened the contraption fully and tried to put it on. The thing was, though, he was already nearly the same size, so it wouldn't fit him. But it would fit someone half his size. Instant giant. He marveled at how flexible and malleable were the wire and leather and straps holding it all together. It would have to be this flexible, because the person had had to both move and shoot while wearing it. 140 became 200-plus pounds. Slim became the build of a defensive tackle. Next, in the mounds of junk, he found pads that strapped onto the legs, adding weight and depth to the lower frame, matching the enhancements to the upper. Okay, that solved the question of literal bulk. Now came the question of height. He kept digging, and found it wedged between two old lamps and a table made partly from a tree stump. He held it up, measured it with his eye. It was a boot with no heel, but rather a thickened sole running the length of the footwear. Wearing it would raise a person's height about 3 or so inches, and he concluded that it would do so more effectively than a heel. 3-inch heels would severely limit one's agility. This was simply like walking on a level raised platform. He placed the boot against his own shoe, far smaller, 9 or 9.5. He found the matching one a few seconds later. He put the boots on the floor. Even though he couldn't wedge his far larger feet inside them, he was able to stand on top of them. 6'5" instantly became 6'8". The same way 5'10 or 5'11 became 6'2". He doubted that the shooter could have brought this equipment in with him on the night of the school play, stashed it in the cafeteria, and then taken it with him along the passageway. But he didn't have to. He could have snuck all this in any time he wanted and left it right here. He found a trash bag and piled all of the items into it. Okay, that solved the size, and also how the man had gotten through the door from the passageway without moving the AC units. He had been a much thinner man then, perhaps as lean as Lancaster, who'd had no trouble getting through the narrow opening. lean like the waitress. She could have managed it. Decker's mind flashed to the camera at the rear entrance of the school. Only from the waist up. The shooter didn't want any possibility that the platform boots would be videotaped. The shooter wouldn't have worried about eyewitnesses observing his feet. Those who weren't dead surely wouldn't have bothered to notice the footwear, not when someone was shooting at them. He called Lancaster and told her what he'd found. Several holy shits later, she said she would be there in 10 minutes to pick up the evidence in the trash bag. Decker perched on a counter in the middle of the shop class and looked around. He wanted to order this all in his head, putting the puzzle pieces together, if only to see how many empty spots he still had. Shooter comes into the school the night of the play, holes up in the freezer in the cafeteria. He comes out the next morning, using the passageway from the cafeteria to get to the back of the school unseen. He'd arranged to meet Debbie Watson in the shop class. He knocks her out, changes into his gear, guns up, walks in front of the camera after dragging Debbie out of the shop class and positioning her next to her locker, and then turns the corner and shoots her. Then he goes on his killing spree, from the back to the front of the school. Then he flees through the passage in the cafeteria that connected to McDonald Army Base, the existence of which he found out from Debbie Watson. He stashes the elements of his disguise in the junk pile, which would account for the second set of shoe prints going up those stairs. After that, he makes his escape through the old Army Base after accessing the passageway revealed through the supposedly solid wall Decker had discovered. Okay, if that's how it went down, Decker had one very important question. Why Mansfield? Why shoot this place up? He had one idea. He had attended school here. But if this really was personal to him, there were things here that were very personal to Amos Decker. They literally had his name on them. He lowered himself off the counter and strode down the hall. School had not resumed, and there was talk that students would be transported to other high schools in the area to finish out at least the first semester. Then over the holidays, the town would figure out what to do about the rest of the year. Decker was torn about the students ever returning here. Part of him wanted this place demolished and turned into some sort of memorial for the dead. The other part of him didn't want to give the bastards the satisfaction of having forced the town to take such a drastic step. It would be like giving in to terrorists. He entered the gymnasium and walked quickly over to a large display cabinet set against one wall. In here were all the trophies and other awards won by Mansfield over the years. They were arranged in chronological order, so it was easy enough for Decker to find what he was looking for. Only they weren't there. Every award that he had won, every trophy that had held his name, and there were about a dozen, was gone. He checked and rechecked. They were not there. He leaned against the case and put his hand up to his mouth. Someone had come in here and shot up Mansfield High, and the mass murderer had done it because of him, Amos Decker. Same motivation for his family's being murdered. Me, Amos Decker. He suddenly felt like Dwayne LaCroix had leveled him again. His phone buzzed. He thought it was Lancaster. It wasn't. It was Bogart. Decker, we found something in a dumpster in the alley where Nora Lafferty was taken. You were right. It was a policeman's uniform. Decker sensed something else coming, though, from the man's unnerved tone. What else? The uniform was authentic. It was a Burlington Police Department standard issue. And? And the uniform had a name stitched on it. They all do. Whose name was it? But somehow Decker already knew the answer. It was your name, replied Bogart. Chapter 36. Decker arrived breathless outside the building. He rushed over to the gate and input the code in the security box.
It was not a very secure code. It was Molly's birthday. The gate clicked open and he walked through. The storage units all had exterior doors, and he hustled over to the one at the very end. He pulled the key from his pocket, but then saw that the lock was gone from his unit. They had done that intentionally. They had wanted him to know. He lifted the roll-up door, his gun in hand just in case, but the place was empty, empty of living things. In here were the possessions he had taken from his old home, because where he had moved to after that didn't have the room. But he couldn't get rid of them. In here were also his tangible memories of a life spent with the two people he was closest to in the world, Cassie and Molly. They were all neatly boxed and labeled and placed on sturdy metal shelving. This place was an expense he couldn't really afford, but he had never missed one payment, going cold and hungry to afford keeping this place, these memories, intact. This mirrored his mind, full of things but neatly organized, with everything capable of retrieval with minimal effort. There was one box in here that he needed to look at. Only one. It was in the rear, to the left, second shelf, fourth box from the right. He reached that spot and stopped. The box was there, but the top was open. He lifted it off the shelf and set it down on the concrete floor. This box contained the remaining items from his career in law enforcement. And part of that was his old police uniform that he had kept when moving up to detective. He had done so because there were times at the department when even plain clothes were expected to don their uniform. When he had left the department, technically he should have turned the uniform in, but it wasn't like it could have been recycled. There was no one near his size in the Burlington Police Department. The uniform was not in the box. Someone had used it to fool Nora Lafferty into letting down her guard for a few precious and ultimately lethal seconds in that alley. They know where I live. They know I have this storage unit. They had desecrated it. He clicked back in his mind to the last time he had come here. 27 days ago, 1:35 in the afternoon. Had they observed him then? Or was it before that last time? Then he hurried to the gate, where there was a security camera. He didn't think it would provide a likely lead, and he turned out to be right. The camera lens had been spray-painted black. Obviously, no one had been monitoring this camera if they hadn't noticed it could no longer record anything for at least nearly a month. He called Bogart. 15 minutes later, several SUVs pulled up to the gate. Decker let them in and then led the team back to the storage locker. He explained as he went along. When they arrived at the locker, Bogart's team went into action, searching for prints or other traces and any leave-behinds. Bogart and Decker stood side by side and watched. "Why didn't you turn your uniform back in when you left the force?" the FBI agent asked. Decker knew exactly where this conversation was going, but there was nothing he could do about it. And in some ways, Bogart was right. "I should have," conceded Decker. "But I didn't." Bogart nodded slowly. Decker wasn't sure if the guy was going to lose it again, but he figured probably not, not with his team all around. "Well," said Bogart, "it would have taken a real police uniform to fool Lafferty anyway. These guys probably understood that." This made Decker feel even guiltier, which was obviously the other man's intent. A staggering body blow without one physical punch thrown. "Do you have the uniform?" asked Decker.
"Evidence bag in the truck."
"Can I see it?" They pulled the bag. Bogart said, "The uniform and cap have already been examined for traces. There was nothing usable." But Decker wasn't checking for that. He was probing the pants near the cuff. About 6 inches from the bottom of the pants, he found what he was looking for. He pointed it out to Bogart.
"Holes?" said the FBI agent. "From pins. Hemming pins."
"Hemming pins?"
"I'm 6'5 with exceptionally long legs," explained Decker. "The guy who wore this
had to take the pant legs up about half a foot. Otherwise, Lafferty would have noticed the uniform was not his. I was slimmer back then, but I'm sure the guy had to cinch the waist tight and maybe pin it in the back. The shirt the same. He examined the shirt and found two pinholes in the fabric near the center of the back panel.
Here and here. And the guy could have rolled the cuffs over and buttoned them to account for the difference in arm length. And a strip of padding in the cap makes a large cap fit a medium head. So, a much smaller man. About 5'11". And thin.
Lancaster told me what you found at the school. Platform boots for height, and some sort of contraption to make the shooter look big in the upper body. Like football shoulder pads and padding for the thighs. Made a 5'11 and lean man look much bigger.
We found nothing on the email trail. IP went nowhere, Bogart said.
Not surprised. Decker looked down at the name on the uniform's chest. Decker. The man in blue. The man he used to be. Then he saw something else. It was faint, but he also knew it was fresh.
Look at the badge, he said. Bogart did so. Is that an...
It's an X. Someone has marked an X on the badge.
What might that represent? To signify Lafferty's murder?
I don't know. He handed the uniform back to Bogart. The FBI agent took it and then gazed at the activity going on inside the storage unit.
How come you kept all this stuff?
Decker looked up and said slowly, far more to himself than Bogart,
It's all I had left.
Bogart glanced at him, sympathy flitting across his features. Decker must have noticed this because he said, No reason to feel that way. You make choices and you live with them.
You didn't choose to have your family murdered, Decker.
I think the man who did it believed the choice was all mine.
That's truly sick.
Yes. He is.
Chapter 37 When Decker got back to the Residence Inn after the search at the storage unit turned up nothing, he found that others had visited him and left very telltale signs behind. A hatchet was stuck in the wood of the door. Slurs had been spray-painted across the window and brick front. Headless baby dolls lay on the concrete. Copies of the news story that Alex Jameson had written were strewn across the catwalk, or else taped to the wall, with venomous words scribbled across them. The photo of Decker had been doctored in several of them to make him look like the devil. Under it was written, Child Killer. Decker pulled the hatchet free, kicked the other items aside, opened his door, and went in, locking the door behind him. He dropped the hatchet on the bureau, went over to the bed, and lay down. He closed his eyes and tried to think of what he was missing, because it was there. He knew it was. For the 100th time, he started to go through all the known facts of the case in chronological order. The knock on his door interrupted these thoughts. He struggled up, crossed the room, and said, Who is it?
Somebody who owes you an apology.
He recognized the voice and opened the door. Alex Jameson was standing there holding one of the headless dolls.
I'm really sorry,
she said, and she actually looked it. What do you have to be sorry for?
Shit, Decker, you're making me feel worse than I already do.
She was dressed all in black, tights, long sweater that covered her butt, low boots with chunky heels, and a short jean jacket. A large bag was slung over one shoulder.
You have time for a cup of coffee?
Why?
I'm not here to interview you.
Why then?
Brimmer told me you've done all the heavy lifting on this case, found all the leads, even though she wouldn't tell me what they were.
She's learning, then.
Coffee? I have some things I want to talk to you about. I'll buy, please. It's important.
He closed the door behind him, and they walked down the steps, across the street, and over a few blocks to a coffee shop that occupied a small niche between two larger stores, one of which was boarded up, and the other one
not far from that fate.
Whole town is going down the tubes,
observed Jameson as they passed the shuttered store.
Before long, I'll have nothing to write about except bankruptcies and foreclosures.
They got their coffees and sat at a small table near the back. Decker watched as she spooned sugar into her cup. What do you want to talk about? He asked bluntly.
I am sorry about the story, Decker. In retrospect, you didn't deserve that. I don't think you had anything to do with what happened to your family. Like you said, I think some psychopath is looking to first screw you and then destroy you. And he used me to do that, and I jumped at the bait just so I could write a story. But that got me wondering why. I mean, who could have that sort of vendetta against you and you not know it?
Decker sipped his coffee while eyeing her directly, but said nothing.
And I'm sure you've been racking your brain trying to think of the same thing.
I have.
It has to be personal.
Murder almost always is.
No, I mean more than that. Brimmer told me there were a couple of communications the killer made. Again, she wouldn't tell me what they said, but they were apparently directed at you.
Decker said nothing, but his look clearly told her that he was interested.
So I did some digging.
Into what?
Into you.
How?
I'm a reporter. We have ways.
And what did you find?
You're from Burlington, biggest sports star the town ever had, the young man who made good.
This comment made Decker think of the trophy case at the school. The shooter took all the trophies with my name on them from the case at Mansfield. She sat back and looked satisfied and also puzzled by this.
I wonder when he did that. Surely not the day of the shooting. He's not going to be hauling hardware around.
There are ways, Decker said. But I can't get into that now. Maybe one day you can write the whole story.
So the question becomes, is it someone who's from Burlington who had a grudge against you all these years? Big football star versus some nobody in the background who was jealous of your success? The fact that he took the trophies might indicate it is someone local. Who you went to Mansfield with? He might have thought you were gone for good when you went on to college, and then you come back here and become a cop and do all these great things. And all these years, the hatred is building and festering until the guy just explodes.
Guys, said Decker.
Guys? More than one, you mean?
You can't write that. He leaned forward. You really can't write that, Alexandra. If he reads it, he'll assume you know not only that, but more. More that could be dangerous to him, and then dangerous for you.
I get that, Decker. You thoroughly scared me before. I go nowhere without Mace and my phone on 911 speed dial.
But you came back. You're here now trying to help me figure this out. They could be watching. Why take the risk?
I didn't get into journalism to be safe. I got into this line of work because I wanted to take risks. You and I are a lot alike on that score.
How so?
I figure the only job riskier than pro football and police work is being in combat. So you're a risk taker. So am I. And if we can do a little good in the meantime, why not? So, any guys you remember from here that hated you?
I was good at sports, but I wasn't good at anything else. And I wasn't a prick. I had fun. I was a goofball. I made people laugh. I messed up. I was not Mr. Perfect by a long stretch. Aside from what I did on the field, I wasn't that special.
I have a hard time seeing you as a goofball.
People change.
You did change, didn't you?
Decker took another sip of his coffee. People change. I'm no exception.
People do change, but I think you changed more than most.
How do you mean, exactly?
The hit. I watched it on YouTube.
Good for you.
It was horrible watching it. I can't imagine how it was actually being the recipient of it.
I don't really remember it. They told me later I shit my pants. Violent collision like that overpowers the central nervous system. During the preseason, the equipment guys came in after games to make sure all the girdles with feces in them were hidden from view and never given out to fans, along with all the blood inside the helmets and on the uniforms. And they kept the reporters out when the guys were in the trainer's room post-game,
so they wouldn't hear the screams. And they gave players pops of ammonia or painkillers so they could talk to the media and hide the fact that half their brain was gone.
I'm not a big fan of football. Gladiators of the 21st century, wrecking each other for our amusement while we drink beer and eat hot dogs and cheer when a guy gets wiped out. You'd think we would have gotten beyond that. I guess there's too much money in it.
See? People don't actually change all that much.
After the hit, you just disappeared for a long time. Got cut by the team, went into limbo. I couldn't find anything on you. And then you turned up back here and joined the police academy. A buddy of mine got me your test scores.
You have a lot of buddies?
A good reporter needs all the help she can get. The scores were all perfect.
A fact my old captain told me, too.
So Captain Miller looked into it as well.
Why all the interest in me?
Because I figure that to find this guy, or guys, we have to work backward, from the motivation to the source. You're the motivation. So I have to understand you to get to them.
She paused and tapped a spoon against her coffee cup.
So where were you during that time?
That's my business.
You don't want to catch these murderers?
Didn't say that.
But you know I'm right. You're the key to what's happening.
She leaned forward and tapped his thick hand.
I want to help, Decker.
What you want is a Pulitzer.
I tell you what. You let me help, and I won't write any story without your permission. You get to vet and approve the whole thing, or you get to pull the trigger, and it'll never see the light of day.
You'd agree to that?
Yes.
Why?
Andy Jackson. You know him?
The English teacher at Mansfield. Last surviving victim of the shooter. He tried to stop the shooter.
He died an hour ago. Andy didn't always teach at Mansfield. He was a professor at Purdue, where I went. He's the reason I'm a reporter. He came here to take care of his ailing mother, sort of person he was.
You never said this before.
Because that was my business. But I'm saying it now.
She put out a hand.
So that's my deal. No story if you say so, but in exchange, I get to help you track these bastards down. What do you say?
Decker slowly put out his hand, and they shook.
So where do we start?
He rose. At a storage unit. Chapter 38. It was late, and they were sitting cross-legged on the concrete floor of the storage unit going through boxes. Jameson had returned a few minutes before with dinner in the form of Chinese takeout. She had laid out napkins, paper plates, and plastic utensils and filled Decker's plate with food before doing her own. He looked at her in some surprise. She explained,
I'm not domesticated, but I am the oldest of seven kids. I'm used to playing parent at mealtime.
He nodded and bit off a chunk of a spring roll while Jameson spooned some egg-drop soup into her mouth. She had brought them each a beer as well. Decker took a swig of his and then set the bottle down. Jameson looked around the unit.
You really kept everything, didn't you?
Things that were important to me.
I don't see anything here from your playing days.
He shrugged and stabbed his fork at a piece of shrimp. Not important to me. She nodded slowly.
But with what happened to your family, doesn't it hurt to keep all this stuff? Your daughter's clothes, your wife's cookbooks, letters, pictures?
The only thing that hurts is not having them here. He looked at her. How long were you married?
Too long.
He looked at her expectantly.
2 years and 3 months. I guess not that long, actually.
What happened?
Things just went sideways. He wasn't the guy I thought he was. And I guess I wasn't the woman he thought I was.
Kids?
Thank God, no. That would have made it a lot harder.
Yeah, it would. Kids make everything better. And harder. She leaned back against the cardboard box, drew her knees up, and sipped her beer. She tapped her head.
So, the hit altered your mind somehow?
Decker nodded and took a swig of beer.
I saw some of the reports from that institute place in the box back there. Was it weird?
He set the beer down and rubbed at his beard.
Do you mean that I feel like a guinea pig? Yes.
How did the others come by it?
None of us were told that officially. I guess patient privacy. But there's always scuttlebutt. Most were probably born with it. A few, like me, suffered a brain trauma. I think some of the folks at the Institute knew about me because the hit was on TV.
Did you all have similar...
gifts? There was a core part of it. Near total recall of certain things. Aside from that, it differed quite a bit. One of them could play any musical instrument with pretty much no instruction. Another could divide any prime number in his head, no matter how large. There was this other woman who had qualified as a grandmaster of memory when she was 7.
Grandmaster of memory? What did she have to do?
3 tasks. The first was to memorize 1,000 random numbers in an hour. Next, she had to memorize the order of 10 decks of cards in an hour. And lastly, memorize the order of 1 deck of cards in under 2 minutes.
Wow. Who knew it would be so easy?
Said Jameson sarcastically. There are around 150 people in the world who have successfully performed the 3 tasks.
Didn't think it would be that many.
It's not, in the grand scheme of 7 billion people.
Could you do it?
I've never tried. Never saw the point. They both fell silent. Jameson watched Decker closely.
Even though this guy's motivation is you, it's not about you. You realize that, don't you?
Now 13 people have been murdered because somebody has a problem with me. This is definitely about me.
You didn't pull the trigger. Someone else did. And whatever he thinks you did, it doesn't justify what he's done.
Tell it to the victims' families.
You are the family of victims.
Decker pushed his plate away and struggled up. His knees and back were killing him, and he had to take a leak. He went outside and around the corner, unzipped his pants, and relieved himself. He was surprised when Jameson spoke. She had apparently followed him.
You don't need to guilt trip yourself. That's what he wants. You know that. It's all part of it. He gets inside your head, he wins. On 2 fronts. 1, his brain beats your brain. So he gets personal satisfaction. And if you're not thinking straight, you have no shot at tracking him down. Win-win for him. He's counting on that.
Decker zipped his pants back up and turned to her. I know that.
So don't let him do it.
Easier said than done.
Maybe for someone with an average mind. You don't have one of those.
He advanced on her, backing her up against the wall of the storage unit. You think having a freak mind means I don't have emotions? That I don't feel anything? Is that what you think? Because you're wrong.
It's not what I think. I think the other guy doesn't feel anything. He's abnormal in that way. You're not.
Then what the hell are you saying?
You can feel anything you want, Decker. You're pissed beyond belief right now. I get that. You think the slaughter begins and ends at your doorstep. Maybe you want to hit somebody or something. Drive your fist through that wall. Okay. But don't let him mess with the part of your brain that you will need to one day put handcuffs on this son of a bitch and then watch him take his last breath in the death chamber. You want to score this game? That's how you score it. Winner lives, loser gets the needle.
Decker took a step back. She didn't move. He looked away, then down at the asphalt. Then he walked back to the storage unit to keep digging. 2 hours later, they had gone through every box and had pretty much nothing. Decker sat back against the shelving unit. I've gone back to the first day I put on the uniform to see who I might have dissed that could have pulled this off. Nobody. I didn't piss off anyone at the 7-Eleven. I busted bad guys, sure, but I didn't do anything to give anyone this sort of personal vendetta. He rubbed his face and closed his eyes. Jameson rubbed a kink out of her neck and looked across at him, suddenly looking puzzled.
Why did you only go back to when you put on the cop uniform?
He opened his eyes. I also went through anybody at Mansfield that might have something against me. There's nothing there. Jameson, nothing.
So you covered your growing up in Burlington, and you covered your life after coming back to Burlington. What about in between?
What? You think the guy who laid me out on that hit is behind this?
After his knees and shoulders gave out, he was cut from his team, went broke, turned to selling drugs, and he's currently in the custody of the Louisiana prison system. And I was never a good enough football player to make anyone jealous of me in college or the pros. Jameson yawned.
So if Sebastian Leopold is involved, why would he have told the cops you dissed him at the 7-Eleven if he didn't?
You mean, why would a murderer lie?
I mean, how could you not know him if you did something so bad he's doing all this in retaliation? And his crazy act could just be that, an act. But this guy strikes me as literal. Your family, Mansfield High, the communications to you, can you tell me what they were about?
One was written on the wall at my old house.
What did it say?
He repeated the message to her.
And the others?
He told her about the code embedded in the musical score on Debbie Watson's wall, and then the words carved into Lafferty.
Jesus. So he refers to you as bro in each message?
Decker nodded.
And he also says you two are a lot alike, that you're all the other has.
Yes.
And with the last message, he's asserting that you actually have control of this thing, that you can determine when to end it.
Decker looked at her. Meaning him or me?
And he obviously wants to be the one left standing.
I would expect so.
Okay, but it seems to me that he feels like he's in competition with you. Brothers, part of something that we're just not seeing.
Decker opened his eyes. Like a team?
You were never in the military?
He shook his head.
Then maybe like a team.
I already told you. I was never good enough to tick someone off in football. I never took somebody's position and along with it a paycheck. Besides, I can't see someone murdering all these people because he was third string to my second string on a college football team. And in the pros, I was just a spare piece of meat. I was never missed.
But you're convinced Leopold is involved in this?
Yes.
Based on your gut?
Based on the fact that he's disappeared. I've checked every homeless shelter in town. He's never been to any of them. He played me. He walked out of that bar knowing that he was going to disappear, and the waitress was working with him. The waitress is the other person, the one with the beef against me. She's the one I really want.
But you mentioned that this waitress might be a man.
Yes, our shooter, in fact. Leopold was in lockup both times. It had to be the other one.
And he used the stuff you found at the school to make himself appear bigger.
Pretty clever, since the cops live and die by physical description. Once they get that height and size in their heads, they never look at anyone outside that box. It's just beaten into us.
So Leopold and or the shooter might know how cops think?
Yes. Jameson mulled this over.
Then the only direct fact he's really told anyone is that you dissed him at your local 7-Eleven. But you're sure he's lying about that, so we have to go back to that and start from there. Decker?
Decker had lurched to his feet and was looking down at her.
What is it?
You said it was our only direct fact.
Right, I know, but...
But it's not.
Not what?
A fact. He hurried from the storage space without another word. She jumped to her feet, grabbed her bag, and followed. Chapter 39. Decker and Jameson sat across from Lancaster at police headquarters. Decker had briefly explained how he came to be working with Jameson, and also why he was here. "We've torn apart my storage unit, but there was nothing there," he added. And then it occurred to me that I had made an assumption that was based on something that had not been confirmed. I accepted as a fact something that had not been proven to be a fact. That's why we're here.
And so you want to hear my interview notes with Leopold after he was taken into custody?
Yes, as precisely as you can make them, Mary. Every word counts. Literally. Lancaster looked a little apprehensive, but then collected her pages and set them in front of her.
Well, to start off, he didn't say much. In fact, he wasn't making much sense. As soon as he finished, I thought his best bet would be to plead diminished capacity.
I don't think his capacity is diminished at all. Quite the opposite, replied Decker. Just read me what he said, and if you can remember anything else, that would be helpful, too.
Well, I guess we've got nothing to lose.
She looked sternly at Jameson.
But just so we're crystal clear, one word of this ends up in a newspaper or other media outlet, I will lock you up personally and forget you're there. You're on my shit list already for that crap you wrote about Amos.
Jameson held her hands up in mock surrender, but her tone was deadly serious.
It never will. Detective Lancaster, not from me. And I am a shit for what I wrote. I shouldn't have done it, but I did. And now I'm trying to make it right. It's all I can do.
Lancaster ran a critical gaze over her.
And Jackson was really your college professor? He was a lot more than that. He was my mentor. Easily verifiable if you don't believe me. I believe you.
Lancaster said curtly.
Then I guess we're all on the same page and the same team.
She looked down at her notes and started reading. When she got to the part about Decker dissing Leopold at the 7-Eleven, Decker stopped her. Those were his exact words? I dissed him at the 7-Eleven?
Yes, I told you that before.
What did you ask him next?
Well, I asked him which 7-Eleven. I was trying to see if his story made any sense. We don't get many folks walking into the precinct and copping to a triple homicide a year and a half after the fact.
And he said the local 7-Eleven, near me. Lancaster looked down at her notes again and frowned.
No, he actually said that you'd know which one.
She glanced up.
I guess I just assumed that you would know at which 7-Eleven you had dissed the guy. At least dissed him in his mind.
So he never said the local 7-Eleven. The one near my house at 14th and DeSalle? Lancaster paled, and when she spoke, her voice was strained.
No, Amos, he didn't. That was a leap of logic for us both, I guess. But I should not have made that assumption. That was a rookie mistake.
I made it too, Mary. Lancaster still looked crestfallen. Can I see your notes? He asked. She handed them across, and he started reading through them. Lancaster glanced at Jameson, leaned forward, and said in a low voice,
So how do you enjoy working with Decker? I did it for about 10 years. No 2 days were ever the same.
Jameson spoke in the same low tone.
It's, unusual. He just jumped up and walked out of the storage unit. I had to race after him.
Lancaster let out a rare smile.
Story of my life.
The women drew apart when Decker dropped the notes on the table. He looked sharply at Jameson. The email address you got the story elements and photo from. Mallard2000 was the handle?
You know it was. I sent it to you.
Lancaster said,
The FBI couldn't trace it back, so I don't see how it's helpful.
It's actually very helpful, and I should have seen it before.
Seen what before?
Asked Jameson. That the answer I was looking for wasn't in tracing it back to the sender. It was right there all along in the name.
In the name?
Said Lancaster.
What name?
Decker stood and looked at Jameson. You have a car? She nodded and rose, too.
A subcompact with 100,000 miles on it and held together with duct tape, but it gets great gas mileage.
She looked him up and down.
It might be kind of tight for you. Where are we going?
Chicago.
Chicago?
Exclaimed Lancaster.
What the hell's in Chicago?
Actually, it's a suburb of Chicago, and what's there is everything, Mary.
But how do you know where to look in Chicago?
Decker said impatiently. He gave me the address, 7-Eleven. Lancaster shook her head and said incredulously,
Okay, but Amos, do you know how many 7-Elevens there are in the Chicago metro area?
I'm not looking for a convenience store, Mary. I'm looking for the street number, 7-Eleven. Lancaster stared at him blankly.
Shit. Are you telling me it was never a 7-Eleven? It was a street number? But he said...
He said the numbers 7 and 11, which can just as easily be 7-1-1. You just wrote it down the way anyone would have who lives in this country.
He just assumed he meant the store chain, when he actually didn't.
But he never corrected me.
Did you expect him to draw you a map? This is a game to them, played by their rules.
Okay, you have the number, but that's pretty useless unless you have a street to go with it.
I do have a street. That was in the email address.
Mallard 2000? But how do you even know it's in Chicago? How does that city tie into what happened in Burlington?
It doesn't. It ties into me.
But Amos, what does...
Lancaster stopped in mid-sentence, because Decker had already rushed from the room.
Son of a bitch.
Yelled Lancaster. Jameson shot her an apologetic look.
Story of your life? Just keep me informed, Jameson, and watch him. He's beyond brilliant, but even brilliant people do stupid things. I will.
And then Jameson hurried after Decker. Lancaster slumped back in her chair and looked down at her notes. Then she balled them up and threw them across the room.
Screw 7-Eleven.
Chapter 40. As it was originally configured, the subcompact had not exactly fit Decker, since they were roughly the same size. They had finally taken out the front seat, and he had wedged himself into the tiny back with his long legs sticking into the front of the car over the hump where the seat had been. He sat with his eyes closed and his hands rested over his substantial belly. They had stopped by his room, and he had packed a canvas bag with some clean clothes. He had learned that Jameson kept a suitcase packed and in the tiny trunk of her car.
Standard operating procedure for a reporter,
she informed him. Jameson looked at him anxiously in the rearview mirror as they sped along.
I wish you could make the seatbelt reach you back there.
Just don't have an accident, said Decker, his eyes still closed. I will make a very large projectile, bigger than your car. You really don't want to find out the mass times velocity of my ass in flight. She looked back at the road. They had been on the interstate for over 3 hours. They were now in Indiana. They had about another 4 hours to go.
I got us rooms on Expedia. At a Comfort Inn outside of Chicago, it won't break my bank account.
She turned to look at him.
You still haven't told me where we're going.
I did tell you. Brockton, Illinois. It's a suburb 20 miles south of Chicago. Not to be confused with Brockton, Illinois, which is a village, an embarrassed township outside of Champaign, with a population of about 300.
Embarrassed township? Seriously?
I didn't name it.
Okay, but you haven't told me where in Brockton we're going.
To the street address Leopold left for me to find.
711 what?
Mallard 2000 is the street name.
There's not a street with that name in Illinois. I checked.
There is a street with that name, but it goes by something else.
I don't understand.
It was a thinly veiled code, Jameson. Try to figure it out. Minutes went by.
Okay, I give. I suck at crosswords.
The street is Ducton Avenue.
Ducton?
Now try to figure it out in reverse. It won't take you long. I have faith. She focused back on the road.
Shit.
She said a few minutes later.
A mallard is a duck, and 2,000 pounds equals a ton, duck ton.
Congratulations. You just made junior detective grade.
But what is at 711 Ducton Avenue?
It's a place I used to call home. She jerked around to look at him, but he was now gazing out the side window.
Your home?
Later, Jameson. For now, just drive. No seatbelt, remember? She angrily turned back around, popped the accelerator, and smiled appreciatively when she heard his head clunk against the back of the car's interior from the sudden uptick in speed. They stopped at a truck diner off the interstate for a bathroom break, a refueling, and a bite to eat. Jameson ordered a cheeseburger, fries, and a Corona. Decker had a large pizza and a Coke. He eyed her food. Despite the Chinese last night, I had measured you up as a health nut. She bit into the burger and let fatty juice roll down her chin before wiping it away.
I could probably eat you under the table.
Maybe in another life.
What do you expect to find out at this ducked-in place?
If it's still there. I tried to call the number I used to have, but it's been changed, and the place's number is not listed.
But what is the place, Decker? You called it home.
It's where people like me were poked, prodded, and tested. Jameson lowered her burger.
With all the memory geniuses? The Institute?
Savants, autistics, Asperger's, synesthesia, and hyperthymesia.
Hyper what?
Thymesia, it's Greek. Hyper means excessive, and thymesia translates to memory. Put them together and you get me. True hyperthymesia really relates to near-perfect recall of one's personal or autobiographical past. I have that. But I also can't forget anything I see, read, or hear. Perfect recall of, well, everything. I had no idea my brain was that big, but I apparently use more of it than most, but only because I got my ass handed to me on a football field.
And synesthesia?
I see colors where others don't. In numbers and places and objects. My cognitive sensory pathways apparently also got melded from the hit I took.
I appreciate you telling me all this, but I'm surprised, too. You strike me as a private guy.
I am a private guy. I've never told anyone about this except for my wife.
Then why tell me? We don't really know each other.
Before answering, Decker ate a bite of pepperoni pizza followed by a long swig of Coke. We're tracking down killers together, Jameson. They've murdered a lot of people, including an FBI agent. I figure I owe you the whole story because you're putting your life on the line. She put her burger down and took a small drink of her beer.
You're making me sound a lot braver than I am.
He ate another few bites of pizza and slurped down his Coke. Let's hope you're wrong about that. Chapter 41. They had checked into their motel, grabbed some sleep, washed up, and changed their clothes. Now they were standing in front of an 8-story brick building with small windows that looked about 60 years old. Jameson glanced at Decker and then over at the building's address represented by metal numbers bolted to the facade.
711 Ducton, so this was home.
Decker nodded, but kept his eyes on the building. It's changed a little. It's been 2 decades.
Was this a true research facility?
For the most part. They were basically trying to understand how the brain works. They were one of the first to approach the field in a multi-pronged, multidisciplinary, methodological manner.
Meaning what, exactly?
Meaning that they didn't just hook electrodes up to your head and measure brain activity that way. They did all the physiological things you would expect. The brain is an organ, after all, and it basically works on electrical impulses. But they also did counseling sessions and group and one-on-ones. They dug deeply into our lives. They wanted to know the science of folks like us, but they also wanted to know, well, us. What having an exceptional mind was like, how it had impacted or changed our lives.
Sounds pretty thorough.
They were.
But what was the result of all that?
Decker shrugged. I was never told. I was here for months, and then was told I could go. But there was never any follow-up, at least not with me.
Wait a minute. You were told you could go? Were you here involuntarily?
No, I volunteered.
Why?
He turned to look at her. Because I was scared, Jameson. My brain had changed, which meant pretty much everything about me had changed. My emotions, my personality, my social skills. I wanted to find out why. I wanted to find out what my future might be like. I guess I wanted to find out what I would become for the long term.
But I guess there were a lot of positives. I mean, a perfect memory makes school and work pretty easy.
He looked back up at the building. Do you like yourself?
What?
Do you like the person you are?
Well, yes. I mean, I could exercise more and I have yet to find the right guy. But yeah, I like who I am.
Well, I liked who I was, too. And now that person is gone.
only I didn't have a choice in the matter. Her face fell.
Right. I didn't really think about that.
And it would be nice to be able to forget some things. People do, you know, want to forget some things.
Decker, even someone with a normal mind would never be able to forget something like what happened to your family.
But I remember every single detail of it, in the color blue. I will never forget any of it. Even exactly how I felt when I found the bodies. Not until the day I die. For me, time does not heal, because my mind no longer allows for the passage of time to dull my memories. They are as vivid today as the day it happened. It's like a picture that never, ever fades. Some people can't go back. I really can't go forward.
I'm sorry.
He turned to look down at her. I can't process sympathy anymore, he said. I used to, but not anymore. He walked into the building, and Jameson hurried after him. The building directory did not contain the name of the research facility. Decker went over to the reception desk, set up in one corner, and flashed his temporary police credentials, but the woman there could not help him. She had never heard of the place Decker named. Decker and Jameson walked around the large lobby. Decker was peering everywhere, taking it all in.